How are you? Happy Martin Luther King Day, and what's on your mind?
Well, let's start with a success story. How about that?
Yes.
So a success story is several of my clients have the same banker, which, you know, for the most part, bankers are extinct as they used to exist, but this guy actually is a real banker. They got bought. The bank got bought by another bank, and they're actually letting him run the bank and the P&L and the whole thing. And he actually can make secured loans for up to $1 million without anybody else's approval, up to $3 million with one person's approval. And if it's over $5 million, they have to go to their district manager and have a three-person meeting, none of this committee stuff. So anyway, so long story short, I reached out to him and said, hey, we have three, you know, mutual clients in common and maybe soon to be four. And I also served with this guy a number of years ago on the Boys and Girls Club. We served together on the board of the Boys and Girls Club. So we knew each other, but we didn't know each other on a very deep level. So, and then I said, I also have a referral for you. I saw that with one of my clients, you did a home equity line of credit, and I have another client that would like one of those, and I'd like for, you know, to find a little bit more about that and to start that process. So we set the appointment to get together, and I asked him a few questions about the home equity loan. I said, well, let's just get that started even before we get together. So before we even met for lunch, I had already referred one of my top clients to him and started that ball rolling, right? So that was really good. So we met in my office first. He got to meet two of my, Zane was in the office, my wife Shell's office, so we got to meet them. I went over our business model, our service model, how we work with clients, who we work with. And then said, tell me more about, you know, who your ideal clients. Oh, and then I said, one of the other mutual clients of ours, they don't have a line of credit with you, but I recommend that they have one with you. Because I know that's something that you do. So I want them to also have a line of credit with you and start that relationship as well. Is that profitable for you? So, oh yeah, we like business. Those are good. So we explained everything. And then we went to lunch, and he said, well, first of all, let me say, I really like your business model. Because I told him since we served on the Boys and Girls Club a number of years ago, we've made a lot of changes and improvements in our business model. He said, well, I really like your business model, your service model, and I'm really impressed. And he said, I want to ask you a little bit more because I mentioned to him sometimes we work with clients on a consulting basis, so we're just charging a consulting fee on a 1031 tax-free exchange, and we have some products that qualify for that. Instead of charging them ongoing advisory fee, we just charge them one-time consulting fee. Works out better for the client, and it's better for everybody. He said, I'm really interested in that. Tell me more about that. And so I told him, he said, yeah, we are involved in a lot of those, and I would be interested. So long story short, when we got through, we had a great lunch, and he said, Preston, thanks. It's really good to reconnect. You know, I was already telling him I'd probably be sending him 8 to 10 referrals a year minimum, and I'd like to do the 1242 for him. But as a next step, I'd like for my team to go meet his team at the bank, and I'd have my staff coordinate that with his staff and schedule it up, and then maybe a follow-up with that. So anyway, it went really well. It was a good success. He said, I really like your business model, and I think we're well aligned, and I'm definitely going to be sending you some referrals. So I didn't even ask for referrals. I just told him I work clients, and he's already thinking about how he can be referring people. So that's a good success. I always like to start with the success story.
Excellent. You did it just by the book.
There you go.
Way to go.
Thank you.
Very nice. It's fun working with people that actually listen.
Well, I'm a big believer in, you know, of taking and following the advice of people that you put on. Otherwise, get rid of the people or take someone else's advice. You know, it's kind of like,
why pay me? You know?
It would be kind of, maybe not as extreme, it's kind of the equivalent of giving your heart to Jesus, but then you decide to go follow Buddha. Well, which one, you know, pick one, you know?
No, I'm fascinated by people that, they'll take my advice up to a point that makes them uncomfortable.
Yes.
And then they will not take my advice from there on.
Yeah, what's the saying? Mastery is what originally is uncomfortable and awkward over time becomes enjoyable and satisfactory or something like
that. Right.
And yeah, Sometimes you have to get uncomfortable. Sometimes you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? And always doing things. If everything is comfortable, you're probably not challenging yourself in any area of your life, whether that's in your, you know, personal relationships, business, or otherwise.
That was kind of Larry Wilson's mantra. Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's where the most growth is, right?
And it's sort of, his other thought was, we're going to be in, you know, when you're on a river, you come to white water. He said, the future will be made up of permanent white water. So get comfortable being uncomfortable, because change will be coming at light speed, which it is.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the irony of that is so, and I tell our clients all the time, but the irony of that is the older people, human beings become, the more they hate change. The irony of that philosophy is that the older we get, the more everything changes. And so the only constant is change. That's the only thing that stays the same, is that everything always changes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So I do have a quick question for you. It kind of falls in line.
I'm good with this.
So my mother has the big birthday this year. She's turning 70.
Yep.
My stepdad, her husband, is turning 80, right? And I had proactively last year trying to help. My mom's birthday is April 26th. I had proactively last year tried to help her start planning for what she wanted and help her better define the outcome of what she wanted. And so long story short, what she thought she wanted was, a couple summers ago, we had a family reunion with my half-siblings and their mother and their mother and my mother are friends and husbands or anything. And so it was short but sweet, but my mother really enjoyed that. She loves to be the center of the park. You know, she has a little, if you heard the expression FOMO, you know, fear of missing out, you know, that's kind of her. She wants to be at every party and love her party. So she thought she wanted to rent this beach house, which I found this fabulous beach house in the Carolinas, because all my siblings, or most, two of my three siblings are in the Carolinas and their mother. My brother's now in Mexico. And so I found this fabulous beach house, a really good deal, right? But basically, you know, for a whole week, for everybody to come together and enjoy, you know, spend about 20 grand, you know, for, you know, 8-bedroom or 10-bedroom, you know, nice luxury beach house. So, but I did kind of prepare her, like, look, you know, you need to focus on the outcome, because you just need to make the place available. And then if nobody shows up except for my wife and me and our son, you need to be happy with that outcome, right? People may or may not come. That was before COVID hit, of course. And so then I think she got uncomfortable with, well, no, I'd be really disappointed if I spent all that money and it was just you and Sean Price. Now we could go somewhere else. So she said, and then COVID hit, she said, not do that. But April's getting closer and closer. So I've been trying to help her better define the outcome she wants. But I think she has a hard time verbalizing what she wants. I know she has a picture up here, but I think she has a hard time. And I talked with her about it last week. I said, hey, have you given any thought to what you want to do for your birthday? Because I know you, and she goes, well, I don't want to have a big party with a bunch of people. That's all I want to do. I want to spend time with family. I may just combine it in. My stepdad's always said he wanted to go do like go to Alabama or Mississippi to one of these really nice quail hunting retreats, you know, where it's like a first class luck. Well, I would like that. He would like that. My son might like that, but I don't know if the girls are going to like that. And so my mom has a tendency sometimes to discount herself and what she really wants, but then she doesn't get what she wants because she doesn't say, this is what I want, right? So like this morning, so we had an idea over the weekend of Yellowstone. Might be a fun family idea that we could, because she had said when I asked her last weekend, she said, well, I don't know, I hadn't really decided, but if you think of anything, let me know. So I was like, well, I thought of something. That was the beach trip. You didn't like that idea. Well, yeah, I know. So anyway, so today I mentioned to her earlier today, hey, we had some ideas, but what's your budget, Mom? And she said, well, I don't know yet. It kind of depends on the trip. And I said, well, you know, the trip depends on your budget, right? So do you want to spend $1,000 or $100,000? Well, not $100,000. Let's say $5,000. And I said, okay. But just can't keep things in mind, you know, for you and Shelly Price, a nice hotel room is $500 a night, right? For two people, just a hotel room. You get two of those, that's $1,000. You get one nice enough that has a bed in the middle, that's a couple, $2,000, $2,500 a night. So you know, now we're not talking about airfare or anything else. So, you know, that may be more of a weekend trip, not a family trip together. And she said, oh, she, you know, you've probably noticed this. A lot of times when people retire, they sort of lose track of what things cost, you know, and, especially since she's not used to taking a trip of five people, you know, it's just a lot of times she goes and does stuff with girlfriends or things.
Right. And they split the room. Right. So it's $125 and they split it.
There you go. Yeah. Or it's, you know, it's $250 a night. They got some kind of deal and they split it. Still, it's $125. Anyway, so she said, so our idea was Yellowstone. I told her, hey, you know, what do you think about Yellowstone? We would be less influenced by COVID. You know, we could do that in the summertime. Right. And most of all the activity is going to be outside. So it doesn't matter if COVID's gone or not, or they got a vaccine. And Montana and Wyoming are going to be a whole lot less likely to shut the world down than California, you know, places like that. So she said, well, that's an idea. Da, 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 da. So she said, well, let's say $1,000. She goes, I want to stay in a house, not a hotel. And I said, yeah, but a nice house is going to be kind of, I want your thinking to be, you know, it's going to be the equivalent of probably a really nice suite somewhere. So she said, well, let's say $1,000 a night would be on a budget. So she said, well, I don't know. I'll think about it. I'll talk to Jerry about it and see what I do here. So I'm pretty good at helping people define their outcome and focus on the outcome. And then the details are easy once you find. But anyway, if you have any ideas, I have a hard time helping her really focus in on what she wants and what outcome she wants to achieve.
What about a house that's closer, like Destin?
Yeah. Well, we can certainly do that, and I'm open and receptive to that, and I had mentioned that as well.
I mean, Destin would be better for her, right? I mean, closer for you guys.
Oh, well, no, this is my real mom. They live in Plano, so they live in the Dallas area.
So they live in, where's your mom live?
Dallas. They live in Dallas.
So, but still, Destin would be closer than North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, well, we hadn't talked about North Carolina. We kind of X'd off the deal because my second mom, my sibling's mother, you know, they've kind of been closed in. And then my brother's not coming. So she's not, I don't think she wants to do the whole beach house and get everybody in the family together anymore. I think she's realized that people aren't going to do that. And we invite her and my stepdad, we normally go to Orange Beach, Alabama, which is right up the road from Destin. And
yeah.
We rented a three bedroom condo on the beach last summer. And invited them to come join us for a few days, and they really enjoyed that.
What if everybody got their own condo and just joined each other outside?
Right. Well, I think my siblings are out of the picture is what I'm getting at.
Ah, okay.
I think she's come to the realization that trying to coordinate six or seven different families, vacation schedules, and my siblings all have kids, and my brother and his wife are in Mexico, and you know, I've got a sister, and trying to coordinate on everybody's schedules and get that is, that would be like playing roulette, you know? I mean, like, probably not gonna happen.
Would it be better to make the reservation now and put it off till the fall?
Right. Yeah, that's what I recommended.
I think you should make the reservations now because of in the fall, everybody's going to want to travel, and all the bargains are going to be gone.
Yeah, I suggested that last year, but she just has a hard time defining what she wants, and so when someone doesn't know what they want, it's hard to help them. The what becomes easy when you understand the why, right? So,
right. You know, when you get older, travel isn't as much fun. So it's really be fun for you to go to Wyoming, but it may not be fun for them.
No, she wants to do something. That's the whole thing. She wants to do something.
She does. How about her husband?
I think he's neutral.
Yeah. It's, you know, we love... when my mom and dad had their 50th anniversary, we went on a ship.
Right.
Went to Bermuda. And the nice thing about that was ex-COVID, everybody could do their own thing on the ship and get together for meals.
Yeah.
And nobody was too far afoot, so you could see everybody all over the ship. It's really fun.
We did that for my grandparents' 50th anniversary as well. My grandparents turned 50. That was my grandmother's request for their 50th anniversary. We all, the whole family went on a cruise together. It was a lot of fun. We enjoyed that. But cruise ships are going to be off of the list for a couple of years, I think.
So next to that is going to a resort, you know, where everybody's there, but they can have their own rooms and COVID down in the fall. I think everybody's going to have the vaccine and should be pretty healthy at that point. Things will open up. And a resort's nice if you can find something where everybody is together and you don't need to go too far afoot. So if you want to go to Wyoming, you know, you go, you know, to a central location. Wyoming is what's Yellowstone, right? You want to go to Yellowstone. So you go to, you know, you could go to,
Well, we could go anywhere. I just think she has a hard time making a decision. She hasn't gotten clear about where she wants to go, what she wants to do, and what her budget is. I was just curious if you had any ideas.
Yeah. I like fly fishing, so Wyoming would be great, right? And
go. That's another reason I mentioned it. I do too, so is my stepdad, all that good stuff.
Yeah, Idaho, you know, Three Rivers Ranch in Idaho would be spectacular. You guys would love that. Everybody could be separated, but together, and the guides, it was the first Orvis resort for fishing ever. They've got the resort, you know, the number one resort. And you know, Lonnie's got a lifetime achievement award from there, and my guy BJ was named Guide of the Year, and the rest of the guides have, you know, Guide of the Year and all that. It's a fabulous place. Three Rivers Ranch in Warm River, Idaho. So it's I can't send you to a better fly fishing spot.
Sure.
Maybe the best in the country. And wow, certainly the women would like it because first class food, the chef is fabulous, you know, places, Lonnie, the owner's fabulous. I can send you a link to their website, but.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll see that.
Yeah. Three Rivers Ranch. I'll send you, I just got a Happy New Year thing from them and they just, they're on a fly fishing show.
There's a great place in Alaska. I said that, and I went to King Salmon, Alaska, about 6 years ago.
Oh,
fishing, and we caught kings and reds and all stuff, and it was a lot of fun. It was a good time. A
lot of fun. I did that, Alaska fly fishing. So much fun. That's a little rougher, but you know, it's fine. A lot of women fly fish now.
That's true.
But if she's active, she'd love that.
Yeah, she would not be into fly fishing. She doesn't have that much patience. So
women do great fly fishing.
Yeah. So switching gears a little bit. So, have you given any thoughts or ideas to, so I did mail the CPA that we discussed that is a workaholic, right? That we're trying to figure out if she's a giver or a taker. And, I did mail her your book along with a note last week. So I did that. And then we have a follow-up meeting, I believe it's next week. It's either later this week or next week. Have a follow-up meeting with her and my new referral where my clients and I are going to meet her at her offices. So we met at my office first with the client. And then we're going to meet at her offices and they can make a decision if they will move over to her.
Great.
Yeah. So any other thoughts about, meeting more frequently with her, getting more, you know, she's the one that's working 120 hours a week, so like it's still more hours in the day, which I certainly get that.
But she's got plenty of time as long as you've got a client for her.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Interesting.
I mean, she's a tough business lady, that's all. She's basically saying, don't waste my time. Wow. I'm interested if you got business for me. And you got to be right straight back at her and say, hey, come on, let's go. Let's have some business, you know? I mean, you can try and do a Zoom call and introduce your team and your process and everything else, just like you did with the other one. But if she's not going to listen, then you got to, I mean, is she ever come up for air, or is this the way she is all the time?
She's pretty much this way all the time. I mean, a few years ago, she bought, I mean, she's kind of a serial entrepreneur. She grew up on a ranch. We have a lot in common. We have a good connection. She grew up on a ranch like I did. And that's probably where she got her work ethic. But, and she doesn't have children. And so, you know, like, she's a scuba dive instructor. You know, it's like, when does she have time to go scuba dive? And then she's also a pilot too. And a few years ago, she bought a business. She bought this real estate thing and then turned to, you know, did like a daycare. I mean, it was just, yeah, I think she just is one of those real high, you know, A personality where she just, you know, she's a high achiever, but I don't know if she knows how to turn it off.
Well, take her to dinner. She's got to eat.
No, we had lunch, remember? That's what, where we had our last meeting was over lunch. And she,
yeah, well, take her to dinner and talk seriously. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she's not going to take time to do anything. You gotta force her hand to, she's got to eat dinner, and she's business all the time. So she might as well go to dinner and discuss business and talk about the enthusiastically endorsed model. Yeah. Teach her how to do it. This is how you can get introductions for me. It's very simple. Ask this question. By the way, I just had a client tell me that his landscaping person is one of his top centers of influence. So when we think, oh, it's only CPAs, attorneys, realtors, commercial realtors, business brokers, don't forget the rest of the people on that list.
Right.
This, you know, this guy said, I probably pay him $20,000 a year just to take care of my properties. So, you mean he travels with a very high end group of the landscaper travels with a high end group of earners and refers in business regularly.
That's surprising. I don't know if you've experienced this, but I've found that people rarely refer up, but they always refer sideways or down. So it's hard for the landscaper to say, oh yeah, you should, they're taking care of someone's multi-million-dollar house. And you know, it's, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm saying it's unusual, right? So that the landscaper saying here, someone's supposed to be in our house, they're a landscaper, and they say, oh yeah, you should talk to my financial guy. And they're like, yeah, I don't think so, right?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing in this case was clearly this guy had gone from being a, you know, a landscaper to probably owning a, you know, a garden, you know, spot, garden, whatever they call those things.
Yeah.
And traveled with people of high wealth. So he probably lived in a big house himself.
Right. And so that was a little different. But
right. So the key is to meet the guy that's a winner.
I can count on one hand how many referrals I've received in 20 years of business from every CPA, attorney, and or fill in the blank. Any other, those professionals, one hand.
Interesting.
They're terrible referrals. And a lot of it is that one, they don't take the time, right? And then two, like one, the estate planning attorney I've worked with for a long time, I got one referral from him over all the years. And I asked him periodically, and you know, it's one of those things where I just think there's two, you know, one, they're not in that mode. And then two, they're like, well, there's risk there because they don't want to go there, right? Like, I just want to get my services. I don't want to take the risk there. And then also, they work with so many advisors, right? Or they work with a lot of advisors. I got one referral from him. Over the years, the referrals, none of my clients now came from a referral CPA. So none of my current clients. So now I realize we're doing some things different, but in my experience, most, can you hear me okay? Or is it, you having a hard time?
It's just, you're just a little far away.
In my experience, And this was the issue with that client that sort of just fired himself, right? That I said, no, I'm not just going to be the money manager. Either we're going to have a relationship, you're going to trust me in all areas, or we're not going to work together, right? So in my experience, most, not all, but most CPAs are very jealous, right, of the fees that we charge and how we get paid, right? And then also, in all fairness, they feel like a lot of times they end up with, stuck with the bag, that advisors haven't communicated with them along the way on taxes and things. But there's an underlying animosity of most CPAs towards advisors is they feel like we're overcompensated and they feel like they do a lot more work. And my deal is if you don't like it, go get your license and be an advisor, right? I don't say that to them, but.
No, I understand. Yeah. And you're probably among the majority of financial advisors, right. But when it works, it really works.
I completely agree. And if Raven would, this other CPA would take the time and send back, it would be, and I don't think she would have a problem referring clients to me because she likes our business model, she likes the way it works, those kind of things. So it's just a learning curve, I guess, or it's a...
Okay, so one of the things that I want you to do is I want you to take seriously this idea of... moving from, it's this continuum, right? So you got suspects, prospects, customers, clients, advocates, ambassadors.
Right.
All right. I went through this idea of creating an ambassadors club in the last hour with a very successful financial advisor. He brought in 26 million last year. He plans on bringing in 35 million this year. He's got 650 million under management. He's a good guy, and I've been coaching him regularly, right? This is a guy, eager learner, and he's 66. So that tells you never stop learning. He wants, and whatever I tell him to do, he actually does it, which is shocking. And I've been, he signs up every year. So we went back through it. Now he can't do everything. So this mastermind group, he's really been slow on it. One of the things he's going to do is start to use the executive summary. He's having trouble with getting people to be compliant with the process. And I said, you're not using the executive summary, are you? And he said, no. I said, don't you do it. Have your teammate do it. They're responsible for the agenda and the executive summary. If you're responsible, you're not going to do it.
Okay? By the way, I was going to say that I made that adjustment last week. I forgot to mention that. You know, you had suggested I needed to do the wrap-up executive summary after each call.
I think it's really good to get people to do what they're supposed to do.
Right, right. No, I was doing it before, but I'm saying – you had made the suggestion that I need to do it immediately after the call.
Right, right. So how did that work?
That worked better.
Yeah. Did it? Good. It's hard. You got to wrap up and then you got to go. Yeah. So it takes a little more discipline. But I had talked to him about this suspect, prospect, customer, client, advocate, a spreadsheet, and put everybody in there and know where they are and look at it every week and see if you're moving them along the continuum. And then I said, to have a person that's an ambassador, that gives you an introduction.
Suspect, prospect, what'd you say next?
Suspect, prospect, customer, client, advocate, ambassador.
Okay.
A suspect, you know what the suspect is. It's something you think might be, not qualified. A prospect is somebody that's qualified but not closed. A customer is somebody that buys from you. A client is somebody that you've done a financial plan for them, they pay you a fee, and they do 1242.
Right. Those are the only people we're taking on.
That's the only people we're taking on, right. But In his case, he still has clients, quite a few clients. I mean, lots of customers. And he's got a lot of advocates that give him referrals from time to time, right? But I said, you got to create that mastermind group and centers of influence, and then you got to teach them what's in it for them. Well, one of the things that can be in it for them is a little recognition. So you create a recognition club called the Ambassadors Club, and you invite them for a river cruise, dinner for, them and their spouse, and you make a big deal out of it because you can afford to. Was there
this is kind of like the enthusiastic endorsed group.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
These are all obviously clients, and the others will probably end up being clients.
Okay.
But to be an ambassador, you must do it every year. So when we got off on a tangent talking about recognition clubs. And when we were both at Merrill Lynch, we went to Europe and went to these fabulous trips because we want them every year. And they don't do those anymore. But the point is that people will do a lot for recognition. So we had something called the Masters, which was an asset gathering campaign. And if you won the Masters, you'd go to Europe. Top 125 in the country,
right,
out of 12,000 FAs. And it was only the top 20 managers out of, I think, 600 or something. So we would win it every year. We'd be number one or two in the whole country. And the guy that promoted it, I told him, you got to do two things. One, give everybody their own name tag, nice name tag. And on it, every year that they're an ambassador, put a star on it. Okay. So the second year they have two stars. The third year they have three stars. If they miss a year, you don't start over. They still had three stars. The fourth year, even though they didn't get it the previous year, you give them another star. And then people go around and go, God, you got four stars. What does that mean? You know, new people that go there. Well, that's how many years I've been giving Preston an introduction. And then what we did was, I said, you need to have a visible way of demonstrating who is here and who's not here. So we made up posters, a photo contest, and made up posters. And we sent them around to every office in the country. And there were the pictures of the people that won, having a blast, and the people that weren't winning, sitting in their offices looking at the poster, right? So we had a poster up every year in this one room. It was our Hall of Fame room. And people would be lucky to have one person win from their office. I had eight in the top 125. Okay. We dominated that entire thing. We had more pictures than anybody else. I took more photographs. I had a photo contest. I hosted it at my house. We brought all our pictures together and we sent them all in, and we got more pictures in that photo contest than anybody else. The point is that people love recognition. Okay. And it's free. So you give them the recognition. And even in your community, they would love the recognition. Oh, you went on that. You're right. You could do it it could be a combined thing with the ambassadors and in your enthusiastically endorsed list. You know, but they'd have to have done it every year, right? So whoever, enthusiastically endorsed list is great, assuming that's one group, though. That's not this group, right? They had to give you an introduction that was qualified to open the account in that year. I'm just telling you, it will work.
Yeah, so if you have 70 households, how many ideally how many people do you have on that group, do you think?
You'd like to have 70.
Right, yeah, obviously.
Right? And they bump themselves off of you. So then you got just have to hire somebody else. It's a good problem. So you'll start out with four people. And the next year you'll have 6, and then you'll have 8, and then you'll have 12.
So, and then how do you recommend you actively market that, or so you just, like, let's say this time next year, right?
You send them an invitation early.
Right.
You look forward to them being on the trip, being on the dinner cruise. And then you send them a bottle of wine during the year and say, thank you for your introduction last year. I'm still thinking of you, looking forward to you being on this trip. Hope you can find somebody that would fit, you know, that would need our help.
Okay.
They'll be thinking about it all year. So your little girlfriend there, she gets on your trip, or she doesn't. And pretty soon, people in the whole community will want to go on that if it's nice enough.
Like, so just a dinner cruise, do you think is a nice event?
A dinner cruise is plenty. It's probably good enough forever. With the spouses, cost you some money, but you know what? Worth every penny. Think about it, right?
Right.
Somebody gives you $20,000, you can spend $100 on them, $200. There's got to be a reason to do business with you versus everybody else. Can't be just, he's right. Great. He's a great guy.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So you kind of blend those two, the enthusiastically endorsed list, but then there's the club.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So another question. So, you know, of course you can't always bat 1,000, right? You swing and sometimes you strike out, some don't. But, and then sometimes you get on a roll where you get up to bat and everything you swing at, you hit, you know, and you're like, woo, you know, and then all of a sudden next 3 bats up, you strike out, right? Which kind of no fun. But so I always like to reflect, and sometimes you always want to be learning and, okay, maybe I shouldn't have swung at that pitch or whatever it is, right? So, I still think there was some other issues with that client that, is with, Morgan Stanley now, right? And I think the other issues is he's 80, he's been doing it his way all this time. He's really kind of more of he has a broker, but it's kind of more like he directs what to do. And occasionally, you know, they say it needs to say, it's not like, here's all my money. You know, that kind of thing. What do you recommend? And then he might have been fee conscious. I'm sure you're right about that. So maybe one of the things, so there are some underlying issues, even if the money wasn't an issue. But one of the things that, you know, you want to try and do is not make money the issue or an issue, right? Compared to the pain. So, I'm wondering, cause I know you asked me, well, if you give me the whole $2.5 million, what would you have charged him or 3, whatever it was? So, I guess what I'm thinking is, should I start kind of sometimes changing my thought process of, it doesn't really matter if this counts $1 million or if it's 10 million, my target minimum is this. So if it's $10 million account and I need to charge them 20 grand to get the business because I guess charge them 50, I should just charge them 20.
No, I think you've got to charge them a fair price, fair price for the service you provide. Don't get away from that.
Okay.
But I don't think you need to, be twice as much as anybody else.
Right. I understand that. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think he was underpaying because it was the old model, you know, where they were getting basis points on the mutual funds.
And yeah. He's being charged 3/8 is typically a transactional account.
Yeah. And I just
and somebody that has got $10 million should be charged about 70 to 80 basis points. Okay. You know, people are going to get a little antsy at 1.25 on 10 million or 1, but at 70 basis points, that's about it. That's about what you charge. You know, some people do less because it's 10 million, but I don't, you know, I think you got to, so that's where the leverage is the larger the money. You obviously, it's like selling houses, you know, you get 6% or 4% on $10 million house. That's a pretty good deal.
Right. Yes. 70,000 for one household is still 70 grand. That's better than getting 3% on a $1 million household. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, I have my own structure, but I'm curious where you think the breaks are. Like, obviously, if you go to, and you got to have normally 10 million or more. If you go to one of these big trust companies, a lot of times 50 basis points is kind of the minimum they charge plus, you know, services.
Right.
So I'm curious where you think the competitive break is, 10, 5, 3, and 1. And sometimes we get over, you know, what the.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can. I would say, you know, it depends on the client and how much they are turning it all over to you, or they want to stay involved and you need to convince them that this is a really good idea. Okay. So, you know, the sophisticated client is going to know what he should pay.
Yeah.
And if you're out of the range, he's just not going to let you do that to him. Okay. So, I think you can be, we always said the market's about 1%.
Yeah. And that's really undercharging, quite frankly.
Yeah. It's a 1% market and it, you know, and it comes down as you go up 5 million, maybe it's 80 basis points, 10 million, maybe it's 70 basis points. I don't think you have to go down to 50 basis points on fixed income. The way you can do it is fixed income should be about 30 basis points.
Yeah.
Right. I have a money manager and I don't think they charge me more than, let's say, 25 basis points or something on fixed income. There's no yield anyway anymore.
Right. Yeah. These yields. It would be negative.
They're having trouble keeping on the money market fund at $1, you know, in some cases. Maybe not now. Interest rates have come up a little bit. They were having trouble holding the $1 because of they couldn't buy paper to yield something positive.
Pretty amazing. All right, so the third question was, I've read the book, Think and Grow Rich, right?
Yep.
And I understand the concept of a mastermind group. So I understand how it works, but I'm not opposed to having a group of like-minded people and those kind of things, but I'm fundamentally opposed to the mentality because of the guy who's not a Christian. And he very adamantly in the beginning of his book says, hey, I don't believe in faith. And he didn't believe that faith healed his son's hearing. He believed he willed it. And I also think that the guy's life is a total failure, right? One, I don't think he's in heaven based unless he changes belief at the end of his life. And two, he was a terrible husband. He left his wife. He cheated on his wife. And then he got Montezuma's revenge because the girl that he shacked up with that he thought he was going to, you know, run away with, who I guess he ended up marrying, she divorced him and he wasn't smart enough to get all the rights. So she's the one who made all the money and all these books for all these years. And he did do some other things. So I don't totally discount that is, but personally, his life was a total failure. And he was not, in my book, he was not a success financially or as a husband, a father, or a life or a partner. So I don't want to emulate someone who clearly does not believe in God and disowns God, but also whose life is a failure. So that's, I just wanted to mention that. I don't have a problem with getting together with people, but I do have fundamental with the mastermind, right? That term and sort of that thought process.
Well, let me, I had problems like you did, and I've seen people and I've seen them make a really big mistake. A friend of mine, Jim Lehrer, came and spoke. I saw him speak for the first time to a group of managers, and Larry Ferlanza, who ran the Ohio complex in that Pennsylvania east of me, said, I've looked this guy up, and he played in Wimbledon, but he played in the U.S. Open, but he lost. You know, he was a loser. And so he wouldn't listen to anything he said. And I'm like, you know, some of the greatest coaches were not great players. And I had a problem with a couple of people and their personal behavior. Lou Holtz, if you study Lou Holtz, very successful guy, but was nasty, nasty human being. Okay.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you look at almost, there's a few exceptions to the rule. And we can use Ted Turner as a great example. Almost every highly successful business person that's ever lived was a complete failure at life. They might have made a lot of money, but they were a complete failure at life. And the reason they made a lot of money is they were so dysfunctional that their whole focus, if you look at Ted's story, the reason he's so driven is his dad committed suicide. It created a hole in his heart that drove him to success and to prove that he had value and worth. But it's also why he didn't have any intimacy, why he'd been married several times, and why he's probably an okay guy. Right? And so there's fundamentally someone that ever achieves that level of success, 99%, I'll make room for 1%. 99% of them are fundamentally broken as a person and their whole life is not whole.
So what I found was that you've got to separate the message from the messenger. Okay. The message that Lou Holtz gave inspired thousands of people. The message that Larry Wilson was married four times, but he was my mentor, my friend, and I put that aside from the message that he shared. It was brilliant, okay? And the same thing is true of whoever it is that wrote that book. I forget. Anyway, the mastermind group is a great idea. So separate the ideas from the messenger, because you can get a message from all kind really bad managers and bad leaders. You can do the opposite of what they do as the message, but don't confuse the activity, the person with their message. Because my poor friend Larry missed Jim Lehrer's whole message. And Jim Lehrer's message was one that saved many of my FAs that had heart conditions and other things that we discovered through because we took them down there to go through his program. So it's a really important thing to understand, that we're all fallible human beings and we all come damaged in some way. And if we can learn from everybody, so, you know, don't be too judgmental. Okay.
Yeah. But there's a difference between being judgmental and having wisdom and discernment from where the information's coming from or the source, right?
But that's your wisdom.
The apple that Adam and Eve ate wasn't bad. It looked good. Right?
Yeah. But I mean, Apple computer was created by a genius who was a horrible human being.
That's true.
Okay. That mean you're not going to buy an Apple computer? No.
No, but I'm not going to follow his fundamentals and philosophy in life.
you don't, he would have told you he was a completely dysfunctional human being. People hated him.
Yeah.
And so you cannot confuse the message with the messenger. I think that's a valid, look, there's one great, you know, Jesus was as good as his message. Since then, I don't think anybody has been able to do that. Okay. But you know, there are those of us that have been very successful.
Well, I mean, look, the fact is that I can't think of the author's name now, but he took somewhat of a biblical principle and skewed it, because the difference is that if you're a Christ follower, right, the Holy Spirit is the ultimate mastermind. But there are some biblical principles that two can put, you know, one can put 1,000 to bay, two can put 10,000 to bay, right? The iron sharpens iron. So I'm not in disagreement or belief that, hey, if you and I share ideas, we're doing good things, we're going to come up with some ideas. But I am opposed to this idea of, we're going to get four people together, we're going to create this mastermind, and it's going to supersede intelligence. I don't buy into that philosophy is what I'm saying. I'm not saying
that you What was the part you didn't buy into? That what?
This whole thing of, if you actually read that guy's second book, you'll see what he really meant by that was he had created his own mastermind. The guy was basically demon possessed. He basically said that he would have these conversations and there were these spirits that were walking around him, these different spirits, and he met with them. Seriously, you should read his second book. You'll have more insight to that. Yeah. He would visit with them, you know, and that he would have these different people is that he had Jesus and Buddha and Mohammed and all these different people at his, as part of his mastermind group, and that he would, you know, commune with them, and that they would follow him around and talk to him. And I'm telling you, the guy's a nutcase, right?
Yes.
I don't discount what you said. Yes. Sometimes that just like sometimes God gives us, presence in unexpected packages, right? Like, oh, I never thought I would learn this through that experience, right? So I'm not telling you, I just need you to know that fundamentally, I don't buy into what he's selling, even though I think that getting together with more than one person sharing good ideas of like-minded people is a good concept and that you can learn.
Right. And you can put any criteria on your mastermind group that you want to.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's a group, is it called Kingdom First or something like that? Christians in financial services?
I don't know.
Anyway, I've got a couple of guys that are, and so they really surround themselves with Christians, you know, and now that gets very tribal in the sense of you don't get a lot of outside input.
That's right.
But it makes it comfortable for them and they trust each other. And so that works. You know, there's a lot of people though that use religion to gain confidence and trust and then screw people.
Right. Yeah, no doubt.
So
you gotta be
kind of thoughtful about how you leverage your tribalism.
Right. Agree. I agree.
Anyway, but no, I had no idea. You know, well, look at Martin Luther King. Okay. Yay, Martin Luther King. He was a philanderer and a He was a horrible person.
And an adulterer, yeah.
right. An adulterer and just a terrible person. But he had a good message and people followed him. So there you go. We celebrate today. My brother is like, oh, he's a plagiarist, a philanderer. Terrific. Celebrate. Oh.
As they said in Russia, it was never the future that was uncertain. It was the history that was always changing.
Right.
Writing the history.
No, that's right.
Okay,
so
for next week.
Yeah. I like the idea of having the questions because it gets you engaged.
Right.
And that's good.
Right.
And we don't just talk about, you know, the product, the process.
Right.
But I don't want to leave anything out. So don't be afraid to have more than three questions.
Okay.
You're allowed to have as many as you like.
Okay.
Yeah, we can go. I had one guy that literally would ask me 40 questions during the, I mean, it would be, I thought he was kind of dumb. But his questions were really amazing that it got me thinking. And I said, you know what? This is a good thing. He's actually quite smart. You know, it's funny how you change your mind about people sometimes. I'd not been, you know, because they were started out really simple and then they got more interesting and complex.
There you go. you never know when it comes to people.
No, I know. I know.
All right. Well, have a great rest of your week.
Yes. Thank you. I would think we'll go play some golf with my wife now.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Thanks very much.
All right.
All right, Preston. Bye bye.